welcome to the Messiantics Podcast, a podcast about all things Messianic Judaism. Each episode, we will be sharing our opinions as we tackle some of the biggest issues in Messianic Judaism. Now, here's your hosts, Rabbis Eric, David, Jonathan, and Toby.
Hey, everyone. This is Rabbi Toby. This is the Messiantics Podcast. We're happy that you joined us this week. And I'm here with Rabbi Eric and Rabbi Jonathan and Rabbi David. And we are finding ourselves with this episode in the middle of, what you could say, a holiday season. This episode is coming to you between Easter and Passover. Now, this is an interesting year because, as we know, especially if you are Messianic, then you know that God's calendar and the biblical calendar, it's its own thing. It's what I've always called the Hebraic calendar or the biblical calendar. It is not the same. When God laid out the biblical calendar for his children and for his people, there was no January, February, March, April. The calendar started at a completely different time. The month of Nisan, of course, which is around the springtime. And what that means is, and again, if you're Messianic, I'm preaching to the choir. What that means is, just about every single biblical feast, and I'm talking about the feast from Leviticus 23, we're talking about Passover, we're talking about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, all those always are on a different day every year. And that's because biblical calendars, the lunar calendar, the Gregorian calendar, which is the January, February, March, is a solar calendar, and it's a Roman calendar. It's completely different. This particular year, though, is interesting because Easter fell on March 31st. That was Easter Sunday for the Christian church. And
for some of the Christian
church. For some of the Christian church, right. There are things about, I had no idea, we were talking about this today before we hit record, that there's a Greek Easter.
Well,
okay.
You have Western and Eastern, and Eastern is a lot more than just Greek.
But. Right. And so we have Easter either has happened or it's about to happen, depending on who you are. And you have Passover, which is on April 22nd, sundown, April 22nd. So we have this stretch. And I think that it allows us to, or at least us four, the Messiantics team, we kind of stepped back and looked at that and said, this is a great opportunity to kind of talk about the differences. It's always around this time of year. It's usually Easter and Christmas is when social media goes crazy with especially Messianic believers, because you do have Messianic believers who are very, very zealous about these holidays, and they want to let everybody know, their Christian brothers and the world, that Easter is not biblical and Christmas isn't biblical. So we're kind of in the throes of that right now as well, where
the second part two of that.
Yeah. At any point in time when I get on Facebook and I'm scrolling through, I'll get some kind of meme that's meant to either poke at Christians or shame Christians in some way because, hey, Jesus didn't do Easter. Jesus didn't do an Easter egg hunt. He had a Passover Seder, and that's all true. And some of that can be really problematic. And I come from a place as being a Gentile Christian called out of the church into Messianic Judaism. And I remember the first couple of years I was not a fun person to be around because I had that view, really zealous, really intense. And God absolutely humbled me and said, hey, look, I'm not saying this stuff isn't true, kid. You know it is. But your attitude is all wrong. So there is, I think there's a place to discuss that as a problem with Messianic believers just coming from a place of the wrong approach, even though they're right. But then there's this other part of the discussion. There's always another side of the discussion, to discuss a problem in the Messianic movement where, and it's something we've talked about as a group off and on many times, which is the Messianic movement. It seems to be they have taken the discussion of what to do with Gentiles in the movement that was had in Acts already. And you have to understand, when they were having the Jerusalem Council in Acts, there was no Christian church. They didn't say, well, here's what we'll do. We'll create a church and Gentiles can go to that church. And then Jews can just still worship. No, there were Jews and Gentiles, one a Messiah, and they were all doing the same stuff. And then the church came along a few hundred years later. But the fact of the matter is, it amazes me that that question is still being discussed in the way it's being discussed with some Jewish Messianic Jewish believers still saying things like, "Well, look, you know, Gentiles don't have to do this stuff." Okay, well, if Gentiles don't have to do this stuff, and you want Gentiles to say, okay, or you know, we've talked about there's a Messianic synagogue somewhere, and we don't like to mention names and this, that, and the other, but I know there's a Messianic synagogue that if in order to keep a quota of Jews in their synagogue, they'll give, when Gentiles come, they'll give them brochures to churches in the area, right? So my problem is that if you're going to do stuff like that, then you don't need to say anything about Christmas and Easter. If some Messianic synagogues and some Messianic Jews are going to be against full Gentile participation in the Messianic Jewish synagogue lifestyle and Messianic Jewish life,
right,
then you don't need to say anything about what they do if they're worshiping God and another, you know, if they're worshiping the Lord, if they're, you know. And so that's kind of our launching point there. I hope I did a good job kind of summing up kind of all the different things that came up when we were discussing this episode. Rabbi Eric has a very timely blog post on his website with a very clever title called "Why I Pass Over Easter," and it's really good. And I'm sure he'll talk a little bit about that. So now that I have kind of, you know, jumped us all off the diving board, I'm gonna throw it out there.
So I want to dive into this real quick because I think the timing of some of your statements, I think the timing of the conversation is opportune because this is what we're dealing with right now. But the timing of some of your statements were really opportune because, yeah, you talk about how, and I always talk about it in our congregation, I try to warn people, you know, if you're coming out of the church, especially Gentile believers coming out of the church into Messianic Judaism that had never experienced Judaism before, coming into Messianic Judaism, like you kind of alluded to, there's this cycle that you go through that where you feel like the church has always lied to you. You're angry that the church has lied to you. You're angry at the church. You don't necessarily believe the church or really believers. Like, and then eventually, a year or two into being a part of Messianic Judaism, you kind of get your head out your tail.
Hopefully.
Stop having as much attitude about it, and you start to realize, okay, look, the church wasn't necessarily intending to lie to me.
I wasn't robbed,
and now God has me where He has me, and this is great. And there's this whole kind of process that goes to it. But you know, you had talked about how in the early days, a lot of people will get that real angst and anger and try to rail against mm-hmm. Easter and rail against the church for doing Easter instead of Passover. And here's all the reasons it's wrong. And it made me, as you started talking about it, it made me mm-hmm. think this week. And we're recording this, by the way, on April 3rd, right? So this Shabbat, we read Parsha Shemini. And Parsha Shemini is the actual beginning of the priesthood performing their job as the priest, as the Kohanim of Israel. And in the midst of this, we see Nadav and Abihu, which are the two eldest sons of Aharon, or Aaron, who end up dying because the presence of God falls on the tabernacle. They get excited, and with what I think is likely, and this is just my interpretation of the narrative, what I think is likely a righteous zeal that was misplaced in its application, they rushed in with what the Torah calls Eitzera, was strange fire, rushed into the tabernacle because they wanted to be in the presence. They rushed into the presence and they weren't supposed to be there at that point in time, right? And there was this whole thing. And then we also read in our Haftorah about Uzziah, right? David is bringing the ark to Jerusalem, and instead of making sure it's carried the right way by priests on their, or the Levites on their shoulder, and da da da, he throws it on a fresh cart with an oxen, and it's being towed along, and it hits a pothole or something, and starts to teeter. And Uzziah, again, the right zeal, he's got righteous zeal, but it's misplaced in how he handles it. And in this case, it was misplaced because they shouldn't have been in that scenario to begin with, but David did something that wasn't right already. He reached up to stabilize the ark because he didn't want it to fall over. And in doing so, he ends up dying because he touched the ark and wasn't supposed to. And so we see this idea of this righteous zeal that's just misplaced mm-hmm. in how it's approached, how it's applied. And I see some of that same attitude, some of that same approach in the way that a lot of Messianic believers will attack Christians about Easter. And so I'm like, we just did a Passover Seder for a church on the last Thursday, which, you know, is really always weird when we do Seders a month before Passover for churches. But we do these demonstration Seders for churches so that they can kind of get a better idea of exactly what happened and what they're celebrating and what it really means. And for this particular church, they wanted it done on the Thursday before Easter. And so we came and did the Seder for them and walked them through and said, look, you know, this isn't Passover. This isn't the real thing, but here's what it, and we walked them through what it would look like. And it was this really neat, eye-opening experience. I didn't go off the rails about you shouldn't be celebrating Easter and the fact that you're, and this is what you should really be doing and da-da-da. We just shared with them the beauty of what Messiah partook in, of what was happening and why it happened at that time and so on, and watching the eyes just kind of pop open as they start to see pieces of the gospel narrative that they had never truly understood before in its fullness start to, like, that full picture comes together was mind-blowing. Several of the people, you know, their tears in their eyes as they're thinking through it and processing. And so I just think it's interesting the timing of this conversation, not just because of Easter and Passover and there being a month apart this year, or almost a month apart this year, but that we're talking about this on the week of Parsha Shemini with the idea of this misplaced zeal. So I'll kick it out from there to add one extra layer to the conversation.
Yeah, I think that there's a number of things that we really need to dialogue about in talking about this. And one of those is that just because something was revealed to you doesn't mean that everybody instantly got the same revelation. I remember when I became a believer, it was so clear to me who Yeshua was, that he was the promised Messiah, that he was the Messiah of Israel, that he was the sacrifice, all the things. And so I sent a letter. I wrote a letter to my father and my mother and my brothers and said, this is what I found. And they absolutely rejected every word of my letter, and it offended me, in, you know, internally, because, like, I had found this great thing that I was going to share with everybody so that they would see the truth and know the truth, and they absolutely rejected it because they weren't in a place to receive. Just because God had revealed to me who the Messiah was, that didn't mean that everybody in the world got that same revelation at the same time.
Right.
And we need to be careful that when we get something revealed, like the fact that Passover is the actual day that Yeshua was crucified on, that he was resurrected during first fruits, that he, you know, all the things that we see, that we know, that are biblical, that are accurate, that are true, but not everybody knows that yet. And sometimes we can be offensive in our presentation and then get offended that somebody rejected the truth when we presented it to them as if they were rejecting us instead of the fact that they just aren't in a place to receive that. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to share.
Right.
And we shouldn't try to present these things. And I'm a firm believer that, as Rabbi Toby said earlier, part of the fact that there is a Easter celebration is because there was a division between Jewish believers and non-Jewish believers that took place in the early believing in the first century. We had this rejection of Gentiles by Jews and this rejection of Jews by Gentiles,
right,
that both brought about this needing of a separate time. And you can study about the division over the fact that the Christian church, part of it said, we don't want to celebrate the resurrection on the Passover specifically because that's a Jewish holiday. But that resulted from a rejection by the Jews of believers and this back and forth division that goes on. So I absolutely believe that we should not be celebrating Easter for a number of reasons, but I don't even have to get to all of the stuff that you read on the internet and the memes and all the hateful stuff. I just think that God gave us a calendar that he wanted Israel to be a light to the nations that they would join. You know, God chose the Jews not so that the Jews would be separate, but that so the Jews be a light and a group that shared with the non-Jews so that they would become part of this. He chose us so that he could choose them also, not so that there be a division. But in order to see that, people have to be willing to open their heart, their mind to the Lord, to the fact that they might be wrong about something, both in Messianic circles and in Christian circles, and see this unity that God wants. I was fascinated this week, and this is going to be a little controversial. So this on March 31st was proclaimed about 10 years ago to be Trans Awareness Day or Trans Something Day. It happened to fall on March 31st, which on the calendar this year happened to be Easter, because Easter doesn't fall on the same date on the Greco-Roman calendar every year either, just like the
Passover
doesn't fall on the same date on the Greco-Roman calendar. And everybody was up in arms when the president and others proclaimed, you did a proclamation. Now, let me say, I am absolutely fundamentally against this deceptive movement of trans and all that. So I'm not validating that in any way.
Right.
But the same response that people have, that believers have, to the changing of that day, the purpose, the meaning of what they call Easter or Resurrection Sunday, by political people redirecting it and renaming it Trans Awareness Visual Day or whatever it was, is exactly how many Messianic Jews and others look at calling Passover Easter.
Wow, that, I never thought of that. It's so true.
And so when you take a day that God appointed, Passover,
right,
and first fruits, and all the unleavened bread, and all this that's biblical, it's in Leviticus, it was followed by the disciples, it was followed by Yeshua, all of this happens, and then rename it and move it and fundamentally shift the focus. The body of believers has done by changing Passover to Easter the same thing that they're complaining about when governmental people changed Easter to Trans Day. And so we just have to be aware of these things. And again, I'm not saying that to attack Christians who celebrate Easter. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that there was a fundamental shift that took place, replacing Passover with Easter. And I would like to see all believers in Yeshua return to unity in celebrating the resurrection, the death, and the burial at the time they happened on the biblical holiday, in unity, loving one another and welcoming one another to observe this feast in unity, rather than having... My problem with Easter is the divisiveness and the replacement part of it, not all of the other stuff that happens that people look at in bad history and bad all kinds of stuff that goes on. But I would love to see there's one faith, one body, one immersion, one God, and we should be doing things in unity and doing that. So my problem with Easter is this separation that God, I think, wants to be restored. Yeshua said, they will know you're my disciples, but by your love one for another. And this unity that he had established of Jew and non-Jew, as the wild and the natural branches are grafted into the same olive tree. So as we're talking about that, that's a real thing we need to be aware of, and we need to do that in a way that's not hateful or hurtful, but loving and instructional and welcoming. And until the Messianic movement gets over itself in some ways with the division between Jew and Gentile, yes, there are Jews, yes, there are Gentiles, but there's one body of believers made up of those. And until we become welcoming of the non-Jewish believers into full observance, as you said, in full participation, Rabbi Toby, that separation is built not by just the Christian church, but by the Messianic movement.
Right.
And we need to own that.
Yeah, I almost feel like, I hate to say this, but I almost feel like there are some Messianic Jews that are almost like, happy that there's the church because, oh, good, that's a place for the Gentiles to go.
Yeah.
And not everyone feels that way. And when we say this, guys, I just want to put a qualifier in there. We're not saying that's every Messianic Jewish person. It's actually in the, I would say, most of the Messianic Jews that I've met are very welcoming. Most. But there's that few. But it only takes a few in the right position, you know,
yeah.
I think, to cause a problem, to cause a ruckus, and to cause division.
Yeah. Yep. And I think in a large part of it is I think there's a desire, or maybe not even a desire. I think it's a fear. I think there's and we've talked about this before on the show. I think there's a fear among some Messianic leaders that if we allow too many Gentiles in, mm-hmm. that what is supposed to be a Jewish thing will lose its Jewish identity. Mm-hmm. And historically, I can see the relevance of the fear, because that's in essence what generally did happen, which gave us the church as we know it from the 3rd and 4th century on.
Right.
So I can understand that. But at the same time, we'll say that we believe that Messianic Judaism is an end time revival, that this is something God has done to bring back the kind of Jewish root of the faith and to reestablish it as this end time prophetic revival thing. And my question is, if we actually believe that, then why are we afraid that God doesn't have the ability to secure and maintain the Jewish identity even as he brings more and more non-Jews into this reality? And I think that's an important thing to wrestle with, because I'm an avid proponent for discipleship and especially for being in the Word of God on a daily basis, right? And that's not to say that I do it every single day without missing it, but I try to prioritize spending time in the Word every day. And one of the ways that I have found to hold myself accountable is I take a picture of what I'm, you know, something that I'm reading from, mm-hmm. and I post a verse with that picture in the Bible on my social media every day, just as a way of keeping me accountable. And that was my original intention. It was, I started doing the posts in during COVID, and it was just a way to keep me accountable. And, you know, during that period, we were all at home. We all realized how easy it is for things to fall through the cracks when you literally have nothing else going on. And I said, I decided to start posting that as a way of holding myself accountable. And then people started reaching out to me going, dude, I really appreciate that. It's helped me, like, get re-energized to get in the Word and da-da-da. And, you know, if I'd missed somebody, message, hey, I saw you didn't post anything today. Is everything okay? Well, this is cool. This is, like, gone somewhere else. But yesterday I posted from Isaiah 56 because it just jumped out at me as I was reading it, right? And it's not that I haven't read it before. I've read it countless times, but Isaiah 56, I'm going to read most of the whole chapter. It's a short chapter, but I'm going to read most of it. Isaiah 56 verse 1 says, "Thus says Adonai, preserve justice, do righteousness, for my salvation is about to come and my righteousness to be revealed. Blessed is the one who does this, the Son of Man who takes hold of it, who keeps from profaning my Shabbat, and keeps his hand from doing any evil. Do not let a son of a foreigner who has joined himself to Adonai say, Adonai will surely exclude me from his people." Again, I'm going to read that. "Do not let a son of a foreigner who has joined himself to Adonai say, Adonai will surely exclude me from his people. Nor let the eunuch say, behold, I am a dry tree. For thus says Adonai, to the eunuchs who keep my Shabbatot, who choose what pleases me and hold fast to my covenant, I will give to them my house, in my house and within my walls, a memorial and a name better than sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that will not be cut off." Verse 6, "Also the foreigners who join themselves to Adonai to minister to him and to love the name of Adonai and to be his servants, all who keep from profaning Shabbat and hold fast to my covenant, these I will bring to my holy mountain and let them rejoice in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and sacrifices will be acceptable on my altar, for my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations. Adonai Elohim, who gathers the dispersed of Israel, declares, I will gather still others to them, to those already gathered." And I just think it's a really powerful passage, mm-hmm. because this is right in the same frame of text, Isaiah 40 to Isaiah 60, is just chock full of messianic prophecy, pointing to the first coming of Mashiach and this idea of restoration and renewal. And here we see the heart of God for not just Israel, not just the Jewish people to observe his Shabbatot, his Shabbats, which, by the way, is not just the weekly Shabbat. It's not just Friday night and Saturday, but it's all of the Shabbatot.
Annual,
it's all of the feast days and such that have Shabbats included with them and so on. He says, don't let anybody who adheres to the Shabbat, who has adjoined themselves with the people of God, who have adjoined themselves with Adonai, say, Adonai will surely exclude me from his people. And what is it that we and the modern Messianic Jewish movement are doing? And I say we corporately, even though we, none of the four of us at this table currently are guilty of this,
right?
At least as best I know. But the reality is that we corporately within Messianic Judaism are doing exactly that. We're excluding people. We're telling people, hey, it's great that you believe in Jesus. Like, this Jesus thing is great. He was really for everybody, but maybe you should believe in Jesus over there and let us keep our stuff and do your thing.
Have your corner.
And so, yeah, I think it's the fact that you made that statement even before we started recording this episode, Rabbi Toby, you made the statement that, you know, it's ridiculous that we'll jump on people's cases about Easter and stuff, but then not let them participate in Passover, mm-hmm. not let Gentiles participate in Messianic Judaism and Passover. I think it's an unreal problem that we have, that we are very actively keeping people away mm-hmm. rather than drawing them in. And I can tell you from my own experience in being invited to minister in churches, doing Passover seders and teachings and stuff, there's a hunger. Like, they don't necessarily understand it yet, but there's a hunger. There's a desire to know more. And as soon as they start to see it and the pieces come together, there's a legitimate awakening that you can see in their eyes that is happening in their spirit. It's not abrasive. We have more and more and more people come to our congregational Seder every year from the church. And I'm not even concerned with whether or not they ever show up in our synagogue. My heart is to at least give them an opportunity to hear an even deeper understanding of the truth that they believe in. And we have more and more people from churches that come. We have churches that buy entire tables at our Seder and bring their leadership staff or bring people from their church just so that they can come and get a deeper understanding of what exactly it is that Yeshua did for us and why it was done at a specific time frame and why so much of it had so much imagery pointing to the death, burial, resurrection of Yeshua. It's unreal. And so I think that there's, like we said earlier, I think there's definitely a misplaced zeal that is in how we in Messianic Judaism react to the church when it comes to Easter and Christmas and so on. And at the same time, there's also a misplaced zeal in some of Messianic Jewish leadership about the place of Gentiles within our communities, within our ranks, within what God is doing here. And I think that there is a zeal. I think it's a righteous zeal to protect what Messianic Judaism is, but I think it's a misplaced zeal mm-hmm. to think that we have to protect it from the people God is calling in. And that doesn't mean that he's calling every Gentile in at this moment. Right. I think every Gentile believer at some point will realize the value of this. We see that in the prophecies that there will come a day where everybody will come and celebrate Sukkot and so on and so forth. But between now and then, I think God is more and more opening up hearts. There's an amplification of those from the nations in the church who have a yearning for more understanding of the Jewish context and root of our faith.
Right. All the more kind of a different direction, I guess, but to prop up your point is to all the more reason to eschew and get rid of, you know, point out and get rid of the a lot of the bad claims that are made about things like Easter mm-hmm. and a lot of the symbolism and things mm-hmm. involved in it, because that stuff, you know, I actually really liked, there was a post the other day that Rabbi Eric shared that I really liked, and I have it here with me, but it says, everything built on a foundation of lies and deception will only stand until the winds of truth blow. And if the entire Messianic movement builds on a foundation, if the foundation of why Passover versus Easter is built on the idea that Easter is this pagan thing that so many claim it is, and I'll be doing a class on that in the future, so, you know, shameless plug. If we build upon that, and that's the reason Christians come to our synagogues is because they're like, well, I want to worship God. I don't want to do that pagan thing. You know, I don't want to participate in, right, you know, this, that, or the other. And they build their entire life, their entire reason for worshiping, where they worship, how they worship, how they raise their family and their children, based upon things that are generally just not true. What you'll find in the next two generations is it won't be the atheists that come after us. It won't be the Wiccans that come after us. You know who it'll be.
Right.
Our children.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any hope of keeping your children in this movement, mm-hmm, then we have to teach them the truth and the truth about history and about a lot of the things associated with that time frame and the complexities and the nuances,
right,
and human behaviors associated with why, you know, one becomes more popular with the church and why, you know, church history, you know, kind of leaves off doing a Passover Seder versus not doing one, which again is largely changing today. But if you teach it based on bad information,
sure,
then it's always your children that find out. Always your children. It's why, you know, why do we see so many people leaving, so many young people leaving Protestant evangelical churches today in droves?
Like young, you know, people?
Yeah, young people, grown-up children, you know, adult children, people, not even teens, but people in their 30s, their 20s, you know, who are like, you know, they find out, oh, what my parents told me wasn't necessarily biblical or wasn't necessarily true. And rather than recorrecting their faith with good information, they just leave. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, but again, when you see how strong some people come on about things like, you know, being anti-Easter in the Messianic world, there's a lot of Messianics who, there are, if you were to ask Christians, what do Messianics believe? There's a lot of them who would probably identify you more based on your hatred for Easter and Christmas, uh-huh, than for your love of Messiah and your love for the Jewish people.
One of the statements that my wife makes on a regular basis is, if all we do is spend all of our time telling people what we're against, when are they ever going to know what we're for?
Right.
That's true, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think there's, to pair with that, this is just another problem that I have with the Messianic world, is that in its fight against Easter, there is a grand forgetfulness of the resurrection in the Messianic movement. Like, grand. And I'll posit this question is, why are we here if, mm-hmm, not for the resurrection?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does the Passover point to?
Yeah, the death means nothing if he didn't resurrect.
Right.
What does the Passover point to? The Passover ultimately foreshadows the resurrection. Matter of fact, you know, Hebrews even talks about a lot of the feasts and festivals that way. They foreshadow the coming of Messiah, of the fullness of the Torah that is found in Yeshua. And in our, what I will call a non-argument fight against Easter, we end up forgetting the resurrection. Because I've never been to a resurrection service into the Messianic movement that was on par with how much we emphasize Passover.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. And the resurrection is foreordained from creation. You know, creation exists because God knew the resurrection was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Everything leads to that.
Yeah, and we have to remember that contrary to popular belief, resurrection is a Jewish belief. It's a Jewish concept. Actually, on Shabbat, we say the Gevurot,
right,
which says, "You, O Lord, are mighty forever. You raise the dead with abundant mercy, uphold the fallen, heal the sick, set free those in bondage, and keep faith with those who sleep in the dust." And then it says, "Who is like you, master of mighty deeds, and who can compare to you, king, who causes death and restores life and makes salvation sprout, and you are faithful to resurrect the dead. Blessed are you, O Lord, who resurrects the dead."
Right.
Resurrection is a Jewish concept. It's a Jewish, right, belief. It's part of our faith as Jews, and it's the fullness of the promise of Messiah.
Mm.
Is the death, not just the death, which we celebrate at Passover, not just that he died for our sins, not just the lamb that was slain. All of that is wonderful, but without the resurrection, there's no newness of life. There's no, there's nothing for us to hold on to for future.
We become like the faith that Paul describes. If none of this is true, then we should just party it up because, like, what's here for us? Nothing.
Right. So it's important that when we talk about these things, now, again, none of us are saying that Easter should be the alternative to Passover. But we need to remember that part of the reason the church does Easter is because there isn't enough focus on the resurrection in Judaism and in Messianic Judaism.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I can, it's part of, and this is just because of my background is more high church Protestant, like Lutheran, that, there's, when they celebrate the resurrection, it is really celebrated. Mm-hmm. Like it is, on Yom Kippur, we get dressed up, it's all white, it's not so much a celebratory holiday as it is somber, but there's a real intent behind showing up to a Yom Kippur service.
Yeah, it seems like within Messianic movement, to me at least, and this, I fault myself involved in this as everybody else is, we spend more time fighting against Easter than we do celebrating the resurrection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we spend more time fighting against Christmas than we do celebrating the birth. And yeah. I'm not saying that we should, Judaism doesn't celebrate births. I understand all that. But there's a point at which, to some people that look from outside the Messianic movement into the Messianic movement, that the resurrection is an afterthought of the focus of Passover. And part of that is, let's be honest, that Passover has become one of the largest outreach tools mm-hmm. of the Messianic movement, because right. in Judaism, even if somebody isn't observant at all, it's somewhere above 70% of the Jews in the world celebrate Passover, even if they never attend synagogue, if they don't do anything else.
It's like Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So it's an opportunity for us to touch and connect with Jewish people while their minds and hearts are on the Passover. But somewhere in our focus of reaching the Jewish people, we've lost the reverence and the honor and the joy of the resurrection.
Yeah. Well, and like we said, the reality is the Passover would mean nothing if there was no resurrection, right? I mean, it would still be a commanded feast. It would still have its connection to Egypt and so on. But in terms of Mashiach, it would mean nothing without the resurrection. That's one of my issues with the cross as a prominent imagery in the body of Messiah. And not that, like, I can go through a whole lot of historical reasons why as a Jewish person I'm not fond of it, but that's right. not even what I'm dealing with right now. But for me, it's like we're focused on the implement of the sacrifice, on the implement of the death with the imagery of the cross. Whether we're talking the empty cross of most of Protestant evangelicalism or we're talking about the crucifix of the Catholic Church where he's still on the cross in the imagery, we're focused on the death, on the implementation of the death, rather than on the resurrection. Whereas, and I've asked people straight up, like, if he were killed by firing squad, would we have all worn little gold rifles around our neck? If he had been killed by, what was it, Old Big Yellow or Old Yellow, whatever it was, the electric chair at Atmore, Alabama, would we all wear little golden electric chairs around our neck? Like, the implementation, it was nothing but a means to an end. The cross was nothing but a means to an end.
Right.
Yes, we can rejoice in what the cross means. That's great. But in and of itself, it was a means to an end. Without the resurrection, the cross means nothing. Mm-hmm. Without the resurrection, the death means nothing. And so why do we so hyperfixate on the tool, the implement used for the sacrifice, while not having, like, if we could come up with, and maybe this is a challenge to us in the Messianics to start this, I don't know, if we could come up with a image representing the resurrection, an open tomb or whatever. Well, I don't even care.
Angel Some Studios sort of, did that. They created a necklace.
That's, oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
If we could come up with some sort of really neat resurrection minded imagery, like, dude, I'd be all that. Could be a unifying factor between Messianic Judaism and the rest of the body. Like, we could all realign our focus on something that matters, right? And I think it's interesting that we spend all of our time. And in Messianic Judaism, we spend all of our time fighting battles that really don't need to be fought.
Yeah, and talking about discussions that I think had already been settled.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, like the Jerusalem Council situation.
Exactly. Yeah. And because we're fighting battles that don't need to be fought, we're ignoring the battles that need to be fought. Like, I really appreciate, Rabbi Jonathan, you bringing up the idea that we under-celebrate or under-commemorate, under-recognize the resurrection. Like, we talk about it, sure. But we, especially in Messianic Judaism, where we're celebrating Pesach, we have the supreme opportunity. If we're going to do the whole, this is the right time, we have the supreme opportunity to focus on the resurrection, because we have a generally solid idea of exactly when it occurred. And we could very easily, this year, this day, every year, not day of the week, but this day of unleavened bread every year, we're going to have a massive resurrection ceremony service, a massive worship service focused on the resurrection or whatever. Matter of fact, I just sent Rabbi Toby's wife, Brooke, our worship leader at CMC, I just sent her a text and said, hey, I didn't think about this till just now, but the Passover Seder for the congregation this year is on April 25th. April 25th at sundown, sometime sundown to early morning, like midnight or early morning on Thursday, on the 26th this year, would be when Yeshua resurrected. Because we know he resurrected sometime after sundown, and then that next morning at first light, the ladies came and found the tomb empty. It's like this year our Passover Seder is at the point in time that he would be resurrecting in that period of time. It's like, so what do you think about the music at the beginning, the worship music at the beginning of our Seder? Because we always have a few songs at the beginning to set the atmosphere, and then a few songs after our meal to reset the atmosphere and bring us all back together. It's like, what do you think about the songs at the beginning of the Seder being focused on the sacrifice, and the songs after the meal being focused on the resurrection? Because I think that's just such, I mean, it's the prime opportunity, right? You can't beat the imagery and the connection. So I she hasn't responded yet. She may not be awake, which kudos to her, because I wish that was me sometimes. But but I think, I mean, that's a phenomenal idea. But yeah, I agree. We need to do better. Yeah. I feel like that's like, that should be like, if we ever make catchphrase t-shirts, do better should be do like better. One of those, like,
we need to stop. Just stop. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't, and just, you know, shifting back on what we were saying earlier about, you know, the pockets of Messianic Judaism and the particular individuals that are either apprehensive or as some websites say, hard-nosed in their policies about Gentiles. My question is that what you are doing is not just not cool, it's not just not wrong, it smacks against what God said in his word through the Apostle Paul when he said that Gentiles are to provoke the non-believing Jew to jealousy. So when you limit Gentiles, when you prohibit them from doing things, from having full participation, you're putting your prized horse for reaching non-believing Jewish people in the stable. Because, you know, to me, again, and I'm not going to tell any stories because I've told many of them. In my experience, what gets a the stories I've heard from believing Jews today who were non-believing, their big thing was, you know, I saw these non-Jews doing this stuff, and I'm like, hey, that's my stuff. And they seemed so happy, and I'm like, not only are they doing my stuff, I'm not doing my stuff. They're so happy doing it, and I'm not. And I wanted to know why, and they told me why. So it amazes me that you're going to, you know, that like a synagogue would direct a Gentile to a church or say, no, you can't do this here at this synagogue unless you convert. And I'm like, how are you going to get what the Bible says? The Bible's economy is Jews are lights to the nations. The nations are going to provoke the non-believing Jews to jealousy, all to get God's restorative work back. You know?
Yeah. Right. While it's true that it's the height of arrogance for those in the Christian world to change the date from Passover to Easter for a celebration that God established, it's also the height of arrogance for Messianic Jews to separate themselves from the non-Jews and call that which God called clean, unclean, and that which God called the Commonwealth of Israel, not the Commonwealth of Israel, and what God called the wild branches grafted into the olive tree, not that. And so while it's, I think, wrong for the church to celebrate Easter, is my opinion, right. on a day different than when God established the resurrection, when God established the plan from the very foundation of the stars and the sun and the moon, when he established them so we would know the Moedim or the appointed times in Genesis 1, for Jewish people to push non-Jewish people out of Passover and to say things like, well, Gentile believers don't have to or shouldn't or should just celebrate Easter rather than Passover is the height of arrogance to tell God, okay, I know you did this, but we like it better this way. Right. We want this separation. I think it spits in God's face.
I think so too, and I think even the seemingly harmless comment that I have received and from people that I really like and love and admire, and it really cut me to the heart. You know, when you're at a get together or when you're at a conference and you have to keep your game face on, when a Jewish person who is just as saved and loved by God as you are, and they look at you and say, well, you know, you don't have to do this, right? And I'm like, wow, like that makes me feel fantastic.
Yeah. Well, especially wow. for me, it's especially like concerning when like it's the same, those same people will also share and teach and post things about the you know, supposed pagan origins of things like Easter. So it's like, so you're just going to let people sit. And that first of all, again, eschewing the pseudo-history and pseudo-mythology of it being from pagan origins, people, like, you're going to let... So you would let someone sit in paganism, that you were firmly believing in this. You would let someone sit in that rather than inviting them to do the things of God. Tells a lot about your character. And I'll just be honest, like, I don't know where some of these people in leadership get... how do you get in leadership? Sick people a lot of the time.
And I just want to say before Rabbi Eric says something, I just... It's connected similar to what Rabbi David said earlier in the episode. It also tells me about how you feel about God's ability to maintain a righteous remnant of Jewish people. Because my thing is that, you know, when they say, well, we got to keep this thing Jewish, we got to make sure there's this. I was like, those discussions aren't on the table. That's not even on the table. Like, God told you to take this to the nations. He told Paul to.
Right.
So the fact there's always been a righteous remnant, that's God's department, not like Rabbi Blank or Rebbetzin Blank's responsibility to say, well, we got to make sure we keep this thing Jewish so there's a remnant. Like, that's not.
Yeah. Agreed.
Blank as in fill in the blank.
I understood what you were saying.
I didn't want
to. So yesterday I was invited to a clergy meeting, clergy luncheon for a local political group. And when a couple of the speakers got up and they said, America is a Christian nation. And they said it several times. And when they had invited me to come speak, and I said, listen, I said, I understand, I think, what your heart is in saying what you're saying. I said, but America isn't a Christian nation. Mm. When you call it a Christian nation, you're saying that I'm not a part of it because I don't consider myself or call myself a Christian. And you're disenfranchising a lot of people that live here. Now, if you want to say America was founded on Judeo-Christian values,
that's more accurate.
Then that's accurate. But to say it's a Christian nation, it disenfranchises, it separates everybody who's not Christian.
Yeah.
As if they can't be an American. And when we say Passover is a Jewish holiday,
That's a good point. Mm-hmm.
Then we're pushing away 90% of the body of believers and saying you're a separate group from us. Yeah.
Which, unfortunately, I think there are those that is their intention when they say that.
Right, but it's horrendously wrong.
I agree, 100%.
And we need to understand it. So as we wrap this episode up, I just want to make it very clear for those who are listening, because I know that there's people who listen to us who listen to and hear different things than what we're saying from what we're saying. So none of the four of us are promoting or saying that Easter should even exist. Mm-hmm. We should all be serving and worshiping and remembering the resurrection on the day it happened, which is during the Feast of Unleavened Bread after the Passover, according to the biblical calendar.
Right.
But we are saying that we need to be more loving and kind in how we share that with people, understanding that not everybody is where we are mm-hmm. at the moment. Not everybody has got the revelations that we have, the understanding of the scripture. And if you try to force feed people stuff, all they're going to do is regurgitate it.
Yep.
And we need to be careful about that.
Or reject it.
Or reject it.
And will cause even greater harm
right.
doing that.
And so as God brings everybody, because God brought me to it, and Rabbi Toby to it, and Rabbi David to it, and Rabbi Jonathan to it at different times in our lives, as God brings people into alignment with his word, we need to be welcoming them as they mm-hmm. come into the singular body of believers known as the Commonwealth of Israel, according to what Paul teaches, not pushing them away, not dividing, not causing more divisions or building up more walls of separation, but we need to be welcoming both Jewish and non-Jewish people into the alignment with God's word and God's calendar mm-hmm. as God brings them to that. We need to do everything we can to teach, to instruct, to welcome those people in, but we need to do so in a way that's godly and righteous and loving as this is happening rather than being hateful, which some of what I see online is absolutely hateful.
And just wrong.
And wrong on top of being hateful, but which is just it's just the wrong way to do it. So we welcome you, all of you, to celebrate his death on Passover when it happened, to celebrate his resurrection on first fruits in the middle of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and to join hands with us as we do so, because we are all Jew and non-Jew, one in Messiah.
Yep, and if you're listening to this episode, which will air before Pesach for sure, if you're listening to this episode and you have an interest in attending a Messianic Jewish Passover Seder, go on Google, search for your area for a Messianic Jewish congregation, or even easier than that, I would also recommend you go to the IAMCS.org, UMJC.org, Tikkun, is it TikkunAmerica.org, I believe, Chosen People Ministry, something like that. Look at these sites and see what congregations they have in your area. They are congregations that I can, with general reason, say they're okay to go to. Go check them out. That I can vouch for.
And if there isn't a Messianic synagogue in your area, look on Chosen People's. I think Jews for Jesus still does
what
Passover Seders in
there.
Churches and find a Passover Seder that you can attend because it will, as Rabbi David says, open your eyes to things in the scripture that you may not have yet seen.
Yep, and I don't think you guys are doing one year, right? We're still working on one. So, but Congregation Mayim Chaim does one every year.
Am Yisrael does. Yep. Beit Israel in Mobile is doing one.
I'm sure Tree of Life in Mobile Slidell.
Tree of Life in Mobile is doing one.
I think DMF is doing one.
And DMF, Dothan Messianic Fellowship, is doing one in the area. So we encourage you, find a local community, a local Messianic congregation you can join and become part of their Passover Seder. And if there's not one in your area, look for a church that has welcomed a Messianic leader in to do a Passover Seder and then participate and mm-hmm. see if it doesn't bring some light in darkness, a little extra joy to your worship, and tears to your eyes as you see the hand of God weaving his word together from Genesis to Revelation.
Yep, and we've had a few people that have asked how they can email us. We do not, as of yet, have an actual email address for the podcast. That might be something we change in the near future. But nonetheless, if you have questions or comments you want to share with us, you can email us at my email address is rabbi@shalomeasternshore.com, rabbi@shalomeasternshore.com. Rabbi Toby's is toby@shalomeasternshore.com.
Mine is raveric@britom.org, and Jonathan's is jonathan.riston@britom.org, and you can always go to our Facebook page mm-hmm. and message us through there.
And with that said, we will see you guys next week.
And remember, do better.
And stop. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to the Messy Antics Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you can be notified every time we drop a new episode. And be sure to follow and interact with us on social media at Messy Antics Podcast.